A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's come to us with a thought experiment that sounds like a stunt, but turns into something stranger the longer you stare at it. The challenge is this. Live indefinitely buying literally everything from Amazon. Not just the obvious stuff. Groceries, clothes, tech, but everything. Shelter, transport, the contents of your bathroom cabinet, the food you'd bring to a dinner party. No cheating. No farmer's market, no corner store, no night out, unless you brought your Amazon purchase meal with you. He wants us to actually plan this out, audit the gaps, and explore how ridiculous it gets when the delivery driver starts to piece together that your entire life arrives in his truck.
The thing that makes this more than a stunt is that Amazon's U.S. delivery infrastructure has gotten genuinely close to making it possible. Same day, next day, two-hour windows. In a lot of metro areas, the physical logistics are there. But everything is a moving target, and the gaps aren't random missing products. They're structural. They're the things that don't fit in a box.
So we're going to plan it out, audit it, and see where it breaks. Four domains: food, clothing, shelter, transport, and then the second order weirdness that kicks in when your life becomes a single recurring delivery route.
Let's start with what everything actually means here, because it's not the same as everything Amazon sells. The catalog is vast, but it's not infinite. There are whole categories that don't ship in corrugated cardboard. Services, for one, you can't put a haircut in a box, medical care, a plumber. But even within physical goods, there are structural gaps. Fresh produce that isn't branded and bagged, custom fit anything, the stuff that normally happens in person.
Right. The prompt isn't asking whether Amazon sells a wide assortment. It's asking whether you can route an entire human life through a single retailer's supply chain. And that's a different question. It's not a shopping list. It's a dependency graph.
And the dependency graph has nodes that Amazon doesn't touch. Prescription medication is the clearest example. Amazon Pharmacy exists, but you still need a doctor to write the prescription. You can buy a blood pressure cuff and a stethoscope, but you can't buy a diagnosis. The gap isn't the product, it's the prerequisite.
So the plan has to account for gatekeeping. Some things Amazon sells only if someone else says you can have them. That's the first structural gap. The second is assembly, and that one's going to haunt the whole exercise.
Let's walk through the four domains and see what the actual plan looks like. Food first, because it's the one you can't skip for even a day.
Food is also where the delivery infrastructure gets stress-tested hardest. Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods delivery cover perishables in a lot of U.S. metro areas. You can get produce, dairy, meat, frozen stuff, the full grocery run. But the failure mode is the delivery window. These are typically two-hour slots, and if you miss yours, you're not eating. There's no backup. The no-cheating rule means you can't run to the bodega.
And the two-hour window isn't just a convenience feature, it's a hard constraint on your entire day. You're planning meals around when the truck arrives, not around when you're hungry. If your window is 4 to 6 p.m. and it slips to 7, dinner's at 8. Do that 3 times a week, and your relationship with food starts to look less like nourishment and more like inventory management.
Perishables are the sharp edge of this. Non-perishables you can stockpile. Amazon sells bulk everything, and you'd learn to keep a deep pantry. But fresh vegetables, eggs, milk, you're on a just-in-time supply chain for your own kitchen. And just-in-time systems fail loudly when they fail.
There's also the substitution problem. Amazon Fresh will substitute items when something's out of stock, and you can set preferences, but you're still surrendering choice at the last mile. You ordered kale, you got spinach. Most people shrug. When it's every meal for a year, those substitutions accumulate into a diet you didn't plan.
What about the stuff Amazon Fresh doesn't carry well? Bakery bread that isn't factory sliced, a decent tomato, anything where the quality judgment happens in person.
That's a real gap. You can buy tomatoes on Amazon Fresh, but you can't squeeze them. The whole category of, I'll know it when I see it, produce is off the table. You're buying on brand trust and star ratings, and you're eating a lot of meals that are fine, but never great. The ceiling on food quality drops.
So food is possible, but fragile. You'd eat, but you'd eat on Amazon's schedule, not yours. Clothing next, and this one seems easier on the surface.
Clothing is where Amazon's private labels actually do a lot of the work. Amazon Essentials, Good Threads, Daily Ritual. They cover basics across the board. T-shirts, jeans, button-downs, underwear, socks, shoes. You can outfit yourself head to toe without leaving the ecosystem. The problem isn't availability, it's fit.
Sizing is a gamble, and the return loop is where the plan gets logistically weird.
Right. You order 3 sizes of the same shirt because you don't know which one fits. 2 go back. That's free returns, which is great, except now you're generating a parallel reverse logistic stream. The same driver who brought you the shirts is picking up the rejects 2 days later. You're not just a delivery stop, you're a churn machine. Order, try, return, reorder. The driver sees the cycle.
And clothing isn't just basics. What about a suit? A winter coat that actually works? Shoes for a specific activity?
Amazon sells all of those. Name brands, too, not just private label. You can get a Calvin Klein suit, Columbia winter gear, running shoes from every major manufacturer. The catalog is deep. But you're still buying without trying on. And for something like a suit, the tailoring gap is real. Amazon doesn't hem your pants. You'd need to buy a sewing machine, which, to be fair, Amazon sells, and learn to do it yourself.
So you're adding skills to the shopping list. Tailoring, basic repairs. The plan starts to demand that you become more self-sufficient, precisely because you've centralized your purchasing.
That's a theme that's going to recur. Centralizing the buying decentralizes the doing. Shelter is where it gets extreme.
You can't buy a house on Amazon, but you can buy a house kit.
Allwood cabin kits are the example that comes up every time this conversation happens. They're real. You can search for them right now. A 1-bedroom cabin, logs, windows, doors, shipped on a flatbed. Prices run from about 10 grand for a tiny studio to 50 plus for something with multiple rooms. It arrives as a palletized pile of wood and a set of instructions.
And that's where the gap opens up. The kit is the easy part. The foundation, the permits, the electrical, the plumbing. None of that comes in the box.
You need tools. Amazon sells tools. You'd need to know how to wire a breaker panel. Amazon sells books about wiring a breaker panel. But at some point, you're not buying a house. You're buying a project that requires skills, time, and in many jurisdictions, a licensed contractor to sign off. The kit is maybe 20% of what it takes to produce a dwelling.
And the no-cheating rule means you can't hire a contractor unless you can hire one through Amazon, which you can't. Amazon Home Services exists, or existed. It's been through several iterations, but it's not a general contractor marketplace. You might be able to find someone to mount a TV. You're not finding someone to pour a foundation.
So shelter is where the plan hits a hard wall. You can buy the materials for shelter. You can buy a tent. Amazon sells extremely good tents. You can buy a yurt. But a permitted, code-compliant permanent dwelling? That's not a product. It's a process, and the process has gatekeepers Amazon doesn't reach.
Unless you lower your standards, a tiny house on wheels, an RV, Amazon sells some of these, or at least the shelves, but you're still dealing with registration, insurance, somewhere to park it. The gap isn't the structure, it's the legal and social infrastructure around the structure.
Transport is similar. No cars on Amazon, not full vehicles you can drive off a lot. But electric scooters, e-bikes, electric skateboards, those are abundant. A Segway 9-bot goes for a few $100, hits maybe 15, 18 miles per hour, range of 20 to 30 miles. For urban commuting and good weather, it's viable.
And for everything else, it's not. Rain, snow, temperatures below freezing. You're not on a scooter, carrying anything larger than a backpack, taking a passenger, going farther than the battery allows. The scooter replaces a car for a narrow slice of use cases and leaves everything else uncovered.
You could buy a cargo e-bike. Amazon sells those too, some with serious hauling capacity. But you're still exposed to weather, still limited on range, and still not on the highway. The transport gap is narrower than the shelter gap, but it's real. You're not getting to a hospital in an emergency on a 9-bot.
And that points to a bigger category, the everything else gap. The stuff that isn't food, clothing, shelter, or transport, but still matters. prescriptions we mentioned. What about glasses? Contacts? Amazon sells reading glasses, but prescription lenses require an optometrist.
Pet food is covered. Toiletries, cleaning supplies, over-the-counter meds, all covered. Furniture, covered. Books, obviously. Entertainment. Amazon sells TVs, game consoles, books, musical instruments. You can build a full leisure life. But services remain the structural gap. Haircuts, dental cleanings, therapy, car repair, wait, no car. Legal advice. The plumber when the sink backs up.
You can buy a puncher. You can buy a pipe wrench. You can buy a book about plumbing. But again, the plan forces self-sufficiency in domains where most people pay for expertise. The hidden cost isn't money. It's competence.
And time. Learning to plumb a sink takes hours. Doing it wrong takes longer. The everything from Amazon. Lifestyle looks cheap on the receipt, but expensive in the calendar.
Let's talk about the logistics failure pattern, because this is where the plan gets actively weird. Amazon's delivery network is optimized for millions of customers ordering at normal frequencies. A single address that suddenly starts receiving everything. Food multiple times a week, clothes in batches, furniture, electronics, tools. That address becomes a statistical outlier.
The algorithm notices. High-frequency deliveries to a single address trigger fraud checks. Is someone testing stolen credit cards? Is this a reshipping scam? Amazon's fraud detection doesn't know you're doing a lifestyle experiment. It sees anomaly patterns and it locks accounts.
So you could get your account frozen precisely because the plan is working. That's a failure pattern that isn't about product availability. It's about the platform's immune system rejecting you.
Even if the algorithm doesn't flag you, the delivery infrastructure wasn't built for this. Amazon's last-mile routing assumes a certain distribution of stops. Your house becomes a daily stop. The driver's route starts to warp around you. You're not a customer anymore, you're a hub.
Which brings us to the driver. This is where the plan stops being a supply chain puzzle and becomes a social experiment.
The driver sees your boxes. Every day, sometimes twice a day. They see the Amazon fresh bags, the clothing returns, the new kettle, the bulk toilet paper. Over weeks and months, they can reconstruct your life from the packaging. They know what you eat, what size shirt you wear, when you bought a new mattress, that you've been on a smoothie kick for 6 weeks.
They know when you're sick because the order pattern shifts to cold medicine and soup. They know when you had a fight with someone because the order volume spikes. Retail therapy in corrugated cardboard.
The weird threshold is when they start anticipating. They see the protein powder order and think running low again. They notice you haven't ordered coffee in 2 weeks and wonder if you switched to tea. They're not judging necessarily, they're just absorbing your life as data points on their route.
Then the relationship crosses a line. They leave a note. Missed you yesterday. Left the package behind the planter. That's helpful. Then it's, saw you ordered the new coffee maker. I've got the same one. It's great. Now you're in a parasocial relationship with someone who handles your possessions before you do.
The prompt mentions the driver connecting the dots and realizing everything you own comes from their truck. But the more unsettling version is when they start to feel responsible for you. You're not just a stop, you're a dependent. If the truck doesn't come, you don't eat. The driver knows this, you know this, neither of you says it.
The no cheating rule makes this worse. In a normal life, if a delivery is late, you order pizza. In this life, you can't. You have Amazon food in the house or you don't. A snowstorm delays your fresh delivery by 2 days, and you're down to emergency rations, which, ironically, you also bought on Amazon, and which also might be delayed.
The single point of failure is the entire supply chain. Amazon's site goes down for maintenance. It happens, and you can't order anything. AWS has an outage, and the checkout flow breaks. A strike at a fulfillment center. A weather event that grounds delivery vehicles. Any of these, and your life stops. Most people have a backup. A corner store, a pantry, a car to drive somewhere. You've engineered those out.
The consolidation benefit Daniel mentions is real, though. Being a power user on a single platform does get you better service. Amazon's customer support treats high-volume accounts differently. Faster refunds, fewer questions, more benefit of the doubt. You'd become a known entity in their CRM.
Prime's perks stack up. Faster delivery slots, exclusive deals, the Whole Foods discount. If you're spending your entire household budget through one retailer, those marginal benefits add up to real money. The question is whether they offset the loss of price competition. You're not comparison shopping. If Amazon raises the price of toothpaste by 30 cents, you pay it. You have no alternative by design.
The psychological toll is the part I keep coming back to. Shopping, actual physical shopping, has serendipity built in. You see something you weren't looking for. You discover a new food, a new author, a new style. The search bar doesn't do serendipity. It does exactly what you ask and nothing more.
The customers also bought. Recommendations are a weak substitute. They're optimized for conversion, not discovery. You end up in a filter bubble of your own purchase history. Your life becomes algorithmically legible and personally narrower.
The constant delivery notifications. Your phone buzzing when your order has shipped. Your order is out for delivery. Your order has been delivered. Multiple times a day, every day. It's not convenience anymore. It's a second inbox you can't ignore because missing one means missing a perishable grocery delivery.
There's also the social dimension. You can't go out to dinner unless you bring your own food. You're the person at the restaurant with a cooler bag. Your friends stop inviting you to things because the logistics are exhausting. Can we just meet at your place? You can't eat anything here anyway.
Family gatherings become negotiations. Thanksgiving. You bring an Amazon-purchased turkey and Amazon-purchased sides, and everyone thinks you've joined a cult, or you're in some kind of financial distress you're not talking about. Is everything okay? You know there are other stores, right?
The stigma is weirdly specific. It's not that you're cheap. Amazon isn't always the cheapest option. It's that you voluntarily surrender choice in a way that reads as either obsessive or desperate. Neither is a good look at a dinner party.
Let's push this to the absurdity peak. The driver has been your lifeline for a year. You know their name. They know your dog's name. They've seen you in your Amazon Essentials pajamas because the delivery came early. They've commented on your new couch. One day they leave a small package that isn't in your order history. A gift. A thank you for being their most reliable stop. What do you do?
You can't reciprocate. You can't buy them anything that doesn't come from Amazon. And buying an Amazon gift card for your Amazon delivery driver from Amazon is a closed loop of existential emptiness.
You've become a one-man delivery route. The truck's GPS probably has your address saved as a waypoint. The driver's performance metrics are tethered to your consumption. You're not a customer anymore. You're a route anomaly that grew a personality.
When the driver changes, vacation, reassignment, quit, the new driver doesn't know the routine. Packages get left in the wrong spot. The fresh bags sit in the sun. You have to rebuild the relationship from scratch. Except now you're not just a heavy user. You're the weird house that gets 12 boxes a week and leaves notes on the door.
11 years.
What?
11 years I've been doing something close to this. Not Amazon. I use a restaurant supply catalog. The kind that sells to commercial kitchens. 50-pound bags of flour. Restaurant depot, except mail order. Everything I eat, everything I clean with, comes from that one catalog. Same delivery driver for 8 of those years. His name is Manny.
Wait, everything?
I have a walk-in pantry. Well, it's a closet I insulated and put a cooling unit in. Bought the cooling unit from the catalog. The flour, the rice, the beans, the canned tomatoes, all catalog. Toilet paper comes in cases of 96 rolls. I order twice a year. Manny brings it on a pallet jack.
Twice a year?
The volume is the trick. You don't order daily. You order in quantities that don't make sense for a household. The catalog doesn't care. They ship to anyone with a credit card. I have a 50-pound bag of pinto beans in my hallway right now because the pantry's full.
You're not triggering the high-frequency flag because you're not high-frequency.
Exactly once every 6 months, I'm the worst stop on Manny's route. The rest of the year, I don't exist. The algorithm sees a bulk order, not a dependency. The failure pattern you're describing. The daily delivery, the missed window, the driver knowing your diet. That's a frequency problem, not a single retailer problem.
The plan works if you invert the cadence.
The plan works if you store things. Most people don't. They treat Amazon like a pantry. That's what creates the fragility. Manny knows what I eat because he's delivered the same pallet of the same stuff for 8 years. He doesn't know when I'm sick. He doesn't know my moods. He knows I really like pinto beans.
The social side? You can't exactly bring a 50-pound bag of flour to a dinner party.
I don't go to dinner parties. I go to Manny's retirement party. 3 years ago, I was the only customer there. His wife asked if I was the flower guy. I said yes. She said he talks about the flower guy.
That's...
It's fine. I brought a gift. Guess where I bought it?
The catalog.
Industrial stand mixer. Manny said it was the heaviest box he ever delivered, and now he had to carry it into his own house. We had a moment.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.